Call to order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Monday, February 3rd, and we will be doing a public hearing on Senate Bill 5529, which is the State Library. I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5529. And before we actually get into the meat of this, I would like to take an opportunity to welcome Cindy Jones to the system. This is actually Cindy's first presentation on behalf of LFO, so I heartily urge you to show her no mercy on this one. And Cindy, perhaps just in way of introduction, you give a little background about how you ended up in LFO and how that all worked.
Well, I'm here on a rotation from the Department of Consumer and Business Services, where I worked in investigations as a manager over there, and had this opportunity and was really excited to try it. And so far, it's been lots of fun learning a lot.
Okay, good. Welcome. You definitely hit LFO during some interesting times. Could you go ahead and take us through LFO's presentation on the State Library's budget?
You should have in front of you the LFO analysis copy. In the presentation, you'll see that the governor's recommended budget was a 7% increase over the 0103 legislatively approved budget. The library is, in addition to general fund, has other funds which are generated from an assessment to state agencies and donations which are received by individuals as well as nonprofit and enterprise foundations. Federal funds are generated from the Library Services Technology Act. There were no budget reports. There were no audit reports completed within the last 2 years, and there were no interim reports that were completed within the last 2 years. And on the very last page, you'll see that there was a state-by-state comparison at the very back.
Cindy, can I ask about this? When I was looking through the spreadsheet that's here, I really found it difficult to think about whether we were comparing apples to apples.
Mm-hmm.
Here. Is there differences in the way these programs are organized that account in some way for the big disparity in some of the numbers?
I think that would be a better... I don't have an answer for that, but maybe Jim Schaff, you could answer that as a state librarian.
Okay. Continue.
And actually, that's a report.
That's it. Mm-hmm. The then let us invite the state librarian forward and any people that you would like to bring with you and have you go ahead with your presentation.
I'll go first. Okay. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I am Frida Bars from Corvallis and Vice Chair of the State Library Board of Trustees this year. Our Chair, Jim Hayden of Redmond, regrets he's unable to be here today. It is my pleasure to be here with our state librarian, Jim Schepke, who will present the 2003-2005 Governor's Recommended Budget for the State Library. But first, I want to tell you a little about the State Library Board and our role in the budget process. There are seven of us serving staggered four-year terms, currently from Myrtle Creek, Eugene, Salem, Morrow, Portland, Corvallis, and Redmond. We meet six times a year for most of a day and sometimes for two. We are committed to providing library service at the state level, and many of us are very involved in our local libraries. We began developing this budget a year ago. Our board budget committee included three board members and a number of staff members, managers and non-managers. We met a number of times and presented our recommendations to the full board in June of 2002. We submitted the board proposal to the governor in August of 2002, and I am pleased to say that Governor Kulongoski accepted most of our board's recommendations. My board and I feel that this is a good budget proposal in tough times. It continues all of the important services of the state library at a small increase in cost. I am proud of our hardworking board and our fine state library staff. I hope you will appreciate the effort that went into this budget proposal. I now ask Jim to present an overview of the governor's proposed Oregon State Library budget for the 2003-2005 biennium.
you. Questions or comments from the committee? Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jim Shepke. I'm the State Librarian, Director of the Oregon State Library. I have a brief presentation for you this morning, which presents the agency overview, and you have a paper copy of that. And before I begin, I want to say that this presentation does follow the prescribed outline by the LFO, and I'm going to try to go through it rather rapidly. If you would wish to slow me down, I'll slow down, but I understand that that you wish us to make haste, so that's what I intend to do.
If I might just interject, just kind of doing a 40-mile-an-hour drive-through on your presentation that you gave us, I'm wondering if there is in here somewhere the priority list of services that the co-chairs requested from the agencies.
It's not in my presentation, but we did bring a copy of that today. And did we give that to Cindy, Keith? I'm sorry, Madam Chair. We have that for you today. Do you have copies, Keith?
Thank you.
And we can go over that, Madam Chair, if you wish to.
I think probably rather than derailing you, if you could take us through your presentation, and then we can discuss this issue.
Yes, Madam Chair. The first slide shows the mission of the State Library. It's very simple. We do three things. We're the library for state government. We provide information to all the state government agencies, the governor, the legislature. The second thing we do is we provide reading materials to blind and print-disabled Oregonians through our Talking Book and Braille Services program. We're the library for the blind and print-disabled in the state. And thirdly, we provide leadership grants and other assistance to improve local library service for all Oregonians. The board has set six long-range goals for the state library. And you see them there. We want to improve service to state government, increase usage and user satisfaction, improve, adapt, and market Talking Book and Braille services to a growing user population. And the board wishes to lead public libraries to achieve excellence in service to children in recognition of the fact that public libraries do a lot to improve children's reading skills in the state, and we're very dedicated to that. Also, the board wants to take a leadership role in developing a comprehensive statewide library resource sharing network, assist local communities to develop school and public library services for underserved and unserved Oregonians. There's about 13% of Oregonians that either don't have a public library or have a library that doesn't meet minimum standards. And finally, there's an internal organizational improvement goal. These are our performance measures that we developed with the Progress Board in the interim. We have 16 performance measures that have been approved, and I'm not going to go through each one of these. I just wanted to show you that that we have those, and they will come up later in the detailed presentation. This is what our organization looks like, Madam Chair. We have a team-based organization. We're one of the few state agencies that has developed a team-based organization, which means that we can do business with fewer managers and at less cost. This is the governor's recommended organization. It's the same as our current staffing, except for the addition of one librarian position to take on a new project that we've been asked to do that you'll be hearing about later. And then I put in here an organization chart for Senate Bill 12. I wasn't sure whether that was going to be discussed today. It appears that it will not be discussed today, so I think I'll just skip over this. But you'll see that that would also require some changes to our organization.
Very quickly, could you just outline for the committee what Senate Bill 12 wants to do?
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 12 is coming out of an interim task force on library cooperation that Senator Durfler created for the interim, and it basically reprioritizes our use of federal funds to undertake some new programs to enable libraries to cooperate better. And I actually have a slide later that gives a little more detail about that. Our three major programs corresponding to our three-part mission statement. This is the Government Research and Electronic Services Team. As you can see, it provides state government with accurate, up-to-date information, gives state government employees easy access to the best and most relevant information on the web, and we catalog and distribute state government publications and distribute those to selected depository libraries. You can see the budget is other funds from the state library assessment, and we can talk about more about that later. I'll tell you more about the assessment.
And the assessment is actually general fund dollars that are being routed through other state agencies to you?
Madam Chair, the assessment is general, federal, and other funds from other agencies, because we assess all other agencies with the exception of higher education. So whatever the funding that a particular agency receives, that's where our assessment dollars come from. In fact, Madam Chair, in 1993, the assessment was put into place by the legislature in a specific effort to minimize our reliance on general funds. We were actually general funded prior to 1993. The assessment was an effort to spread out the cost over all fund types.
So just for personal clarification, prior to 1993, you had a direct appropriation from the general fund. Following that, you had an assessment from all of the state agencies with the exception of higher ed.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct.
Representative Bates, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. I was on the same line. I'm going through the LFO's evaluation. I'm really having trouble with other funds, as you obviously were, too. There's just sort of conflicting information. Some of the other funds comes from the Braille program. Some comes from assessment on other government agencies. And I'd like to have some detail of how that assessment is constructed and where those monies break out. So we really know how much general fund the library is getting, not just sort of this vague number. And possibly there's more information here I haven't had a chance to get to yet. But I'd like to have that broken out so we can see how much general fund is really involved. We're facing a crisis in the state in many areas, and we have to look at all general funds very, very carefully. So we need this broken out a little more tightly if we could, please.
I think that if I might interject here, the issue that we have is that assessments on agencies really is general fund money that's just coming through another little sidebar route into another agency budget. That it all does originate from the general fund pot of money, and I think that we're real interested in figuring out how the money flows into agencies, where it flows in from, and where it flows out to. So I would concur with Representative Bates that it would be, I think, interesting for this committee to know at the very least what amount of money is coming from which agency, and then we can have LFO make a determination about the probability of that being federal funds or whatever. But my recollection of the process is that federal funds or funds that come in from fees or permits or things are pretty directed in how they can be spent. So it'd be interesting, I think, if we could get a deliberation on how much of this was general fund and how much of it was really what we call other funds being not general fund originated. Senator Meserve.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I totally agree with your request, but also I'd be interested in if those fees have changed since 1993, and do you anticipate an increase in fees in the future?
I can answer that question, Madam Chair. Senator Meserle, the State Library assessment for this upcoming biennium is a 3.99% increase over the assessment for the prior biennium. We did everything possible to minimize having to increase our assessment. We've saved quite a bit of money in this biennium that we can carry over to the next biennium. So that is what the increase was. And I do have a detailed list of the assessment breakdown by agency with me today, if you would like to see that. And it, I think it gives you an idea where the money comes from.
I think if you could give that information to our analyst and we could take a look at it. So from the 40,000 foot level then, what portion of your budget gets broken out into the part of it that's covered by the assessment?
Madam Chair, it's only our service to state government, our library service to state government, which is one of three programs. And that's the program that in 1993 the legislature decided to fund with an assessment on the agencies that are benefiting from that service.
That doesn't make sense. Okay.
Madam Chair, ask one more question.
Let's give them a chance to find that page that we've asked.
You asked the price list, which you did.
I thought I had it. You have?
I have a copy. I just have one copy. Sometimes they go and duplicate.
If we just at some point get copies of this, I don't know that we're going to get into the discussion at this level right now, but I think for when we get into work session that people are going to be interested in knowing this. So if you could make copies and then have them distributed to the members' offices, that would be helpful. Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to follow up on my previous question. Again, was this the first rate increase you've had since 1993, or how often do you do a rate increase?
Madam Chair, Senator Mesley, every biennium we determine the need for our assessment, and I can't tell you exactly what the increases have been, but they have increased since 1993. I think this increase was probably the smallest increase that we've seen.
Thank you.
Would you like to see that information, Senator?
Well, I'm trying to get a picture of how across the since 1993 how much this has increased.
I do have a slide later that shows just the total of expenditures in this program that will give you some insight into that.
Representative Bates, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just if I could ask one more piece of information when you brought forth the other funds discussion with us. I'd also like to see in that what general funds have to be used for match money for federal grants. Obviously, there's at least one in here, I see. Or at least it looks like it's general fund money, because that also helps us prioritize how we use our general funds. We like to avoid the loss of grant money if we can, or federal match money if we can. And that's not real clear. The figures just aren't here for me and that I can find quickly and easily. So from my point of view, it's how much other funds you're actually receiving and how it's dispersed and how it comes in, and what kind of match money you have to come up with to get federal grant money so you don't lose that also. And then the other funds have to be broken out in a way so we can readily see what comes in from blind, disabled, and other assessments.
I think that will become clear, Representative Bates, as I get farther into my presentation today.
Did,
no, I was just wondering whether Representative March had a question.
Oh, Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You say it's a 3.99% increase over prior, but what is the rate that's charged? That would be one question. And the second question is more of a historical one, since I don't know how many of us were here in 93 on the committee when that decision was made, but what was the thinking behind putting it into an assessment? Was it so that it would be considered part of administrative overhead that could be passed on to federal grants, or what?
Madam Chair, Representative March, it was the thinking that instead of having this service to all the state agencies be reliant on the general fund, that it was really more appropriate for that to be reliant on all funds. So, for example, the Oregon Department of Transportation, I think, pays the largest assessment, and they're not a general fund agency, so it spread that cost over different revenue sources, and that was the thinking in 1993. The way we calculate the assessment, and this was part of that bill in 1993, is that we take two-thirds of it, and that's allocated by FTE, and we take one-third of it, and that's allocated by actual use of the state library, which we collect use data every biennium so that we can see which agencies are using our services more than others. And so it's a combination of those two factors that that actually allocate our costs across the agencies in this assessment.
So the two-thirds that's based on a state agency's FTE is irregardless of the level of usage? The two factors are not interrelated?
We take two-thirds of the cost and allocate it by FTE and one-third by use, yes.
So an agency, for example, like the Department of Transportation, which is huge, would have a proportionately larger assessment regardless of the fact of whether they use the library services or not.
That's true, Representative Warren, based on that FTE part of the assessment.
Representative March.
A follow-up. And this was done by a bill. Do you happen to recall a statute or a
Senate Bill 20 in the 1993 Senate?
Thank you.
There you go.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, what was the most recent audit of the State Library, the Secretary of State's audit?
You recall, Keith, I would not. 96?
Madam Chair, I would request a copy of that report, please.
Cindy, could you be the owners on that one? I hope you can find it. Further questions or comments from the committee? I think that we are, given the challenge that we have this time, where we have already been given the instructions from the co-chairs that the revenue level that the governor's budget budgets to is probably overly optimistic, and that we need to back off from that level, that we are actively looking for places to save the general fund and the aspect to this. So if you'll bear with us as we try to pull forward the information that we think we're going to need to do this. I know that there are going to be aspects of this that kind of sound like a witch hunt and that we're piling on, but please forgive us for that, because we honestly are wanting to do the right thing in terms of providing services through the library, but also being very much aware of the fact that what we're doing in human services and education and public safety is going to cause the state a lot of problems.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Please proceed.
Thank you. The second major service is Talking Book and Braille Services, which is summarized on this screen. We work in partnership with the Library of Congress to provide this service. It's really a state and federal partnership that delivers this service to our state. The Library of Congress supplies the collection and the Talking Book players, and the U.S. Postal Service provides free postage to mail the Talking Books and the Braille Books to about 8,000 users around the state. And you can see the funding for this program is primarily general fund. There is other funds in this program. We solicit our patrons twice a year and actually receive donations from our patrons to help support this service.
Is that the other fund aspect to this, is donations?
It's not entirely that, but it's a significant portion of that, Madam Chair.
If I might ask a question, on the Library of Congress supplying the collections and the book players and the U.S. Postal Service providing the postage service, is there a required match to that on the part of the state?
The requirement that we have, Madam Chair, we do have a written agreement with the Library of Congress that requires us to serve all eligible Oregonians with this service. So that's the requirement, that we can't deny the service to someone who is eligible for the service. And there are criteria that the Library of Congress has about various conditions, disabilities that qualify a person for the service.
So is this a qualification based on equal access? I guess what I'm trying to get at here is, what if you don't have the money to serve everybody that wants to take part in the program?
Then we would be jeopardizing our federal support for the program, because that is in essence the match, is that we agreed to serve everybody that needs the service.
So at the current level of funding, you never turn anyone away?
That is true, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. Library Development Services is the third major service of the State Library. As you can see, we provide leadership and assistance to about 1,600 local libraries, public libraries, academic and school libraries. We administer the Ready to Read grant program, which we're proud to say has helped to increase library services to children by 80% since that program began in 1993. And we administer federal grants, make library services available to every citizen, demonstrate new services. You can see the funding for this program is mostly federal from the Library Services and Technology Act. The general funds are nearly all the Ready to Read grant program. I think about $1.2 million of that $1.4 million is the Ready to Read grant program. So that's money that goes out to local public libraries.
Question. Representative Smith.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. On your Ready to Read program, is that done in the schools?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that program is not done in the schools. It's only statutorily for public libraries.
Do you have any connection with the schools in any of the programs you administer?
Representative Smith, we do work closely with school libraries and with school librarians and with the Oregon Department of Education. The board is very concerned about school libraries, and we do everything we can. We don't have state funds to help with school libraries, but we have federal funds that school libraries are eligible to apply for, and we have given federal grants to school library services.
Okay. Also, have you been affected by any of the No Child Left Behind initiative from the federal government?
No. That does not apply to the state library,
okay,
as far as we know.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
Go ahead. Thank you, Madam Chair. The Ready to Read program is a pure general funds?
Yes, Representative Bates.
Is there any matches from any other source?
No, but it does count against a matching requirement for the Federal Library Services and Technology Act money. So there is a matching requirement for that federal money, and Ready to Read is part of that.
And if I've read this document correctly, Madam Chair, that for the matching funds of the rest of the program, you have to maintain the same expenditures from year to year over a 3-year period of time. Is that correct?
That's true for the LSTA dollars. That is our matching requirement.
What? What's LSTA?
That's
I'm sorry.
We get lost.
That's the federal
money.
There is a matching requirement for our Library Services and Technology Act funds, and Ready to Read is part of that. Talking Book and Braille Services is part of that, and we can give you the detail on how that works. It's not as tough a match as some that you may see. I mean, we actually, in the governor's recommended budget, there's a 15% decrease to the Ready to Read grant program that we estimate would not trigger a loss of federal funds. So it's not like a dollar for dollar match. We actually have some flexibility. We can do some reduction without incurring a loss of federal funds.
I think it would be valuable information for the committee to have some background on where the match will allow us to go with the requirements of the match without actually jeopardizing the federal funds. Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. assume from the presentation that we're only talking about operating funds, but do you deal at all with capital funds for upgrading or building new libraries, and or do you get involved in the prioritization of other sources of funds that go into library capital?
Madam Chair, Senator Mesley, no, we do not. We, our building is owned by the Department of Administrative Services, and we don't get involved with capital construction.
For other local libraries as well?
We do not. We have no... excuse me, Madam Chair, Senator Mesley, there was a time when we had federal money to do that, but that time has passed.
If I might just interject, Representative Smith, when I served on the advisory board for the Myrtle Creek branch of the Douglas County Library System, mm-hmm. we regularly did the Ready to Read program, which we offered in the summer for
right.
kids when they were out of school,
mm-hmm.
and interfaced with the school librarians before mm-hmm. school got out to
yeah.
let the kids know that that program was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really popular program.
Well, we do this in Malala too. What I was trying to get at, I was wondering if there was a link between what they do in the Department of Education, and I was wondering if there was an overlap in funds or services, and it does not sound, that was what I was getting at, not that this wasn't a good program, but it doesn't sound to me like there is the overlap between what they do in the Department of Ed. Thank you.
I know that especially in the rural areas that it's very, very common for the school librarians to bring their kids down to the library
yeah.
and stock them up on books. And
that's right.
Take them through the process.
Boy, it's hot.
Please continue.
Thank you. The board, in addition to our long-range goals, they have adopted a strategic plan for the next biennium. I'm not going to go through each one of these, but I wanted you to see that we do have a strategic plan. I can talk about that more later if you wish. The outline calls for you're wanting to know about major program changes, and the State Library has had major program changes in the nature of downsizing, and twice in the last 2 decades the State Library has downsized to a considerable extent. In the early 1990s, the State Library had the highest position reduction of any agency with more than 20 employees, as you can see from this slide. In order to accomplish that downsizing, the State Library Board directed a reorganization from a hierarchical organization. You can see here what we used to look like before the reorganization. We had managers and silos and all those things that you sometimes see. We reorganized into this organization, our team-based organization, which we're very proud of, and we feel is very efficient and effective. Part of that reorganization involves streamlining of management, and as you can see from this slide, in 1991, when I became state librarian, we had 11 managers, and today we have 5. We also make more use of volunteers, we believe, than any other state agency for our size. We have 1 FTE volunteer for every 5 staff at the Oregon State Library. And in this biennium alone, we've had more than, as you can see, 26,000 volunteer hours, and we estimate we've saved near $400,000. That's estimated at $15 an hour salary and benefits if we had to hire that workforce. The State Library controls costs in many ways, and again, we have a highly focused mission. We only do 3 things, and we try to do them very well. We have a team-based organization, as you've seen. We use volunteers. We raise funds for talking book and braille services. And we make extensive use of partnerships. You've heard about the partnership with the Library of Congress to deliver talking book and braille services. We repair talking book machines at the McLaren Youth Correctional Facility at a very low cost as a way to put their young people to work there. We partner with the Willamette Valley Genealogical Society to have what really is the best genealogy library in the state of Oregon, right across the street, and we spend no state money on that. The Willamette Valley Genealogical Society provides all the research materials. We don't buy any genealogy books with our assessment dollars. That would be inappropriate. They provide the staffing for that. Every day at the library, there's genealogy volunteers to help people with the research, so our staff doesn't have to do that. We partner with Willamette University. We have our automated computer system that runs our catalog and circulation at Willamette, and we partner on that. It saves both of us a lot of money. The computers, they actually run it over there at Willamette. We partner with the Information Resource Management Division on some projects that you'll hear about later. We're very proud of our partnership last year with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that brought $2.2 million worth of computers to our public libraries through a grant that we got from the Gates Foundation. All this went to local public libraries, not a dime went to the state library, but we were very pleased to do that. Madam Chair, the Douglas County Library received $146,000 worth of computers, 45 computers, including a computer lab at your Roseburg facility. So that was a tremendous partnership that we're very proud of having brought to our state.
Just happen to know that.
Do you have any information about the Ash?
How about the Jackson County Library?
Jackson County Library, Madam Chair, received more than that.
And rightly so.
Oops, not.
As you can see from this slide, Madam Chair, we've managed to control our administrative costs over time, keeping them around 8% of our total budget. This slide shows that we've been able to maintain a low level of management staff to save money. Information technology is tremendously important to the state library. We have three FTE that work on that, and this shows you the various systems that we have at the library. Our talking book and braille services catalog and circulation control, we intend to replace in this biennium. We actually have a system that isn't made anymore. The software isn't made. The computer is about, it's very old and could fail at any time. But we're going to replace that system. We're going to do it without general fund money. We're going to get donations and grants to do that. We don't plan to ask you for that money, but we're going to replace that system. Our office automation is very important to us. All our staff have PCs and have had for a long time. Our library catalog and circulation control at Willamette University I've already talked about, and our web-enabled services. We use the web tremendously to deliver information to our customers. We have a service that you'll see called SmartOrGov. We have an electronic mailing list service where we host over 240 mailing lists for all of the state agencies. And there's about 33,000 subscribers. If any of you are interested in a constituent newsletter delivered over email, we'd be happy to work with you on that. That's what this service is about. It's about no-cost communication through the state library.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mazur.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question. I guess I'm not sure, sir, if you're the right one to ask the question to, but I assume that all of our departments in the state government have IT staff, and I'm wondering if there's not an opportunity to pool that in some way rather than each agency having their own IT staff, and it would seem to me that there's an opportunity for some efficiencies there.
Do you want to comment on that, Mr. Shepke?
Information technology is so central to what we do these days that we feel we need this level of staffing at the state library. We literally could not function if our computer systems were not maintained and developed. That's how we do our business. We do share IT staff with Willamette University. That's the one area where we have partnered to save money. We don't run our own library system. It's run over there, and so that is a place where we save money.
Madam Chair, just follow up, and this is more of a statement, I guess. I certainly appreciate the need for the services, But sometimes I would think there's different loads in different departments or different buildings and different systems. And if we had a system in the state where they could share that amongst all the state agencies, and maybe just as far as being on the cutting edge of the newer technology, it would be good to. And maybe there is an agency that coordinates all this, but I'm not aware of it.
You know, I think that the technology issue is something that we're going to run into in all of the agencies that we look at. And it may be interesting. I know that within them, there is an information management component.
Madam Chair,
Linda, you look like you need to say something.
I'm Linda Ames with Department of Administrative Services. And I was just going to say, within DAS, there is a division, the Information Resource Management Division, where we have opted as a state to centralize some of those kind of IT projects. The model that we're really working on is that for higher level issues that are statewide and sort of guiding Oregon, for instance, e-commerce and e-government that affects all agencies and those kind of little bit more statewide issues. And at this point, we've opted to keep day-to-day working people working with local IT systems within an agency. Those staff tend to be within the agency. Whether we find the right balance is, you know, probably always a question. I know the DAS budget is having hearings in the general government subcommittee right now, and I don't think they've done information resources yet, but you may want to connect up with that committee as well.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
You look like you need to say something.
Well, all right. I come to these meetings, so I keep my mouth shut. I never do. I don't know why you invite me back sometimes, Madam Chair, but thank you. Central libraries have two ways of submitting information. One is hard copy and one is obviously electronic transfer. And generally speaking, my experience has been in the medical field, that hard copy is very expensive. Electronic transfer, where the individual accesses the information, searches the information, and then downloads it and prints if he wants himself or just takes it directly, is less expensive, dramatically less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
We found running our central library for our physicians that if we let them have either access, they just pick up the hard copy when they had a chance. We start charging for hard copy and not charging for electronic copy, it changed behaviors rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
Have you considered that as a cost-cutting measure? You're assessing all agencies in the state with other funds, which really are general funds, a great deal of them. Is there a difference? And they're being assessed based on the size of their programs, not how much they access your information. Do you charge differently for a hard copy versus an electronic transfer? And would you consider, as a cost-saving measure, that you'd go to that totally and eliminate assessing agencies based on their size?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I think the concern we would have about going to a fee-for-service scenario at the state library would be that many agencies just wouldn't use us. With the budget problems that the state faces, we'd be concerned that agencies would, staff would be directed not to use the state library, not to incur that cost. And we think it's terribly important that all state employees access the best information they can. So that's why we think the assessment is a good system, and it is based on use. One third of it is based on actual use and two thirds on FTE. But to your other comment, I would say that we have gone totally electronic. We license 56 databases for state government. We deliver that information to people's desktop. We buy very few books and hard copy of anything anymore, because you're absolutely right. The most cost-effective way these days to get people information is over the web.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please continue.
Just two more slides in my overview and I'm done. Senate Bill 12, let me just summarize it very quickly. It was asked about earlier. It's not the state library's bill. It's introduced by the Senate Interim Task Force on Library Cooperation. But we did participate in the development of Senate Bill 12. Mm-hmm. It creates a new program at the library to do something similar to what Representative Bates was just talking about. The license electronic information for all the libraries in the state. And if you do that, you can save lots of money, and you can make these databases available in all libraries. And so that's the goal of Senate Bill 12. To pay for that, Senate Bill 12 eliminates a program that's 10 years old that was paid for with federal dollars. This is all about federal dollars, by the way. And that in that program, we pay libraries that lend more books to other libraries than they borrow. And that program has been very useful in keeping a free flow of interlibrary loans. But we think that libraries will continue to do that without the reimbursement. And so Senate Bill 12 redirects that federal money into this new program to license databases for school, public, and academic libraries. And as it says here, it can be funded within the governor's recommended budget. We would just need some additional limitation for a little bit of extra federal fund limitation and some other fund limitation. And we can, you'll hear more about that later.
Questions? Representative March.
Thank you. So this would allow, public school libraries to access databases that they now currently have to purchase independently if they want to use that.
Actually, Representative March, we've been doing this on sort of a pilot basis, and so actually right now we license two databases for the school library. We don't do it. Another organization does, but it's been very, very beneficial, and the cost savings are just incredible. We had one school district that was paying $80,000 for a periodicals database. Their cost today is, I think, maybe $1,000 for that same database because you license it for the whole state, not just for one district.
And once again, the funding source of this is just a redirection of some existing federal funds, and then you'll have an ability to get some additional federal funding, so you'll need an increase in your expenditure limitation.
Yes, Representative Morgan. We estimate a small increase in the limitation we would need for federal funds, but we anticipate getting those federal funds through the Library Services and Technology Act.
Senator Mesner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On your third bullet point of eliminating the 10-year-old program for libraries that supply more material than they receive, could you give us more background on that? Because, Madam Chairman, I'm envisioning some specialized libraries, and I see the people from the Hatfield Institute or in Newport here. But I could see where a library like that might have information that is valuable to disseminate, but where they might not be receiving as much information. And so are they going to be put in a difficult position by this elimination?
Madam Chair, Senator Mesley, in the interim committee, we had representatives from the major net lenders. We have the University of Oregon. We had Oregon State University. We have somebody here today from Oregon State University. They participated in this, and in some cases they will get less of a benefit from Senate Bill 12 than they did under the old program, but they support this Senate Bill 12, and the Oregon Library Association has endorsed it. So we worked through those issues in the interim committee, and I believe the library community is very much in support of this, even though for some libraries that were big net lenders, they might see less of a benefit from the new program.
That's your follow-up. So are there other sources of funds that they can cover those expenditures with?
Senator Mesley, no, but we think that one thing libraries have learned over the last 10 years is that they really benefit from the free flow of information. Even the libraries that loan more than they get, some of the things they get are very, very important. And so we think that's why the library community supports this. We think the library community in Oregon is now willing to lend freely among themselves without any compensation to do that.
Hey, just briefly, could you outline the impact that Senate Bill 12 would have on the county libraries in the rural areas?
Representative Morgan, Senate Bill 12 would greatly benefit the rural libraries in the state because currently under this pilot program of database licensing that we have been doing for several years now, we've had to charge back all the costs of these databases, and we have 35 rural libraries that simply can't afford it, and they don't have access to this information. So Senate Bill 12 actually has a provision that for the very smallest libraries, we'd use federal dollars to just buy these databases for them, and we'd have equal access to this information in all our rural libraries, which is very important. It shouldn't make a difference whether you live in Portland or Myrtle Creek as to whether you have access to the information you need, and that's what we're trying to achieve with this.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Last slide is our affirmative action report, and our board has worked very hard on affirmative action. We're very committed to this. Our board, by the way, is made up of seven Oregonians, four women, three men, an African-American from Portland, Yvonne Williams, and Elaine Day, who's a disabled person and a user of the Talking Book and Braille services. So we have a diverse state library board, and we have a diverse staff, as you can see from this slide, and we continue to make progress on affirmative action. And that concludes my overview report.
Further questions or comments from the committee members?
Madam Chair, are we going to talk about the prioritized list?
I was thinking the same thing. I didn't want to say anything.
Is that later? Though?
What I think would be the best way to do this is to have Linda go ahead and do the DAS presentation, and then we can open it up to a discussion of the prioritized list and questions that develop. So, Linda, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Ames with Budget Management Division, and I just wanted to clarify we're sort of going on the standard presentation format. Jim actually has some more detailed information on his programs. He did sort of a summary. My idea was to give you the budget summary, and then if you want, he does have some additional detailed stuff. I'm going to go through this handout. It's the standard handout we've been bringing that helps to explain what's in the budget and how we got to the governor's numbers. On page 2, slide 2, is sort of all the numbers. If you look at the governor's budget column, you see their total budget's about $13 million. I don't have mine on the electronic, sorry, on the projection. And you can also see it's split between general fund, other fund, and federal funds. Overall total funds, it's a 7% increase since the fifth special session in the current biennium. And the governor's budget contains 46 positions. There's a little more detail here on some of that as we go along. On slide 3, the three fund types. Other funds, you can see about 43% of their budget. Almost all of that is the assessment funding, about 94%, with that other small piece on donations in the Talking Books and Braille. The assessments of the other state agencies, as he's discussed, two-thirds FTE, one-third usage. The total assessment revenue this biennium is about $5.4 million, and we'll leave them a 3.7 months of ending balance. Generally, and I believe this was some LFO analysis done last biennium, the assessments like library for general central services for state agencies is about 40% general fund. So about 40% that's coming from the other agencies starts out as general fund, About 60% is other funds or federal funds combined. The budget system doesn't actually break out library separately from other assessments, so I can't tell you exactly library brings these many of each fund type, but the state government service charges, generally speaking, are 40% general funds.
Representative Bates.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I was kind of writing kind of fast, too. Did you say the other funds coming into this agency, when broken down, are about, of the other funds, about 40% are general funds and 60% are federal funds from the other agencies?
Okay. Of their other funds revenue, the assessment revenue that they get, which is all already about 40% of their budget. Okay, of that assessment revenue, roughly speaking, 40% of it comes as from other agencies, starts out as general fund.
Right.
So in the assessment...
And the other 60% of it is federal funds?
Other funds and general funds from other agencies.
But that 60% could be used in those agencies for other things if they chose. They don't have to put it in the library system in order to get their match.
Oh, exactly.
Thank you.
But it also means if you cut the library's budget in the other funds portion of their budget, for every dollar that you cut in the library's assessment, you would save about 40 cents in general fund from other agencies.
Which they could reprioritize if they chose to. Or they may choose to leave it here.
Exactly. Or, I mean, generally the way that we handle those kind of budget adjustments is if you cut an agency, Department of Administrative Services is exactly the same. If you cut the library's budget or any other assessment budget, your staff, as you go through the various agencies, can capture those general fund savings out of agencies.
Madam Chair?
So this would be very analogous to an attorney general's assessment or something like that, where there's a rate that's set, and if it expands, money comes out of everybody's budget. If it contracts, money goes back into everybody's budget.
Madam Chair, that's exactly right.
I'm going to still go back to this 40%, 60%, because I'm kind of having an attack of confusion here, so bear with me. Now, I understand that you said that 40% of the assessment comes from a clear general fund pool of money within each of the assessed agencies. Now explain to me where the other 60% comes from.
Madam Chair, the other 60% is all other fund agencies or federal fund agencies. And an example of an other fund agency would be the Board of Nursing. All their revenue is fee revenue. Their entire budget is funded with other funds.
Okay.
But part of that funding comes to the library as part of their assessment.
Okay. Now explain the federal funds part of it.
For instance, Department of Transportation, I'm guessing, has a large amount of federal funds, and that part of their assessment is paid with those federal dollars.
But my understanding of federal funds is that there is virtually no fungibility to them, and that they have to go to the programs that they're directed to go to by the federal government.
Madam Chair, you know, I'm not sure about that. Let me see if I can get more information on how much federal funds comes as assessments and what those restrictions might be.
I would appreciate your checking on that. Representative March.
As you're checking on that, as I recall, because when I used to work with budgets with Multnomah County, if you had a uniform assessment for administrative programs, of which the library is considered a support program to the departments, you could if you charged it equally, internally and externally, you could count that as administrative overhead for federal grants, for example. And so if it was not uniform, in other words, if you said, okay, well, if you're only general fund, you don't have to pay, then you could not charge that to federal grants either.
You're talking about a maintenance of effort situation?
In essence, yeah, that if you treat this like an administrative overhead, part of the cost of doing business, part of like the accounting costs of doing business, that part of government's cost is included in the library fee, I mean, includes the library fee. I mean, right now, to do a program, you have the program, but you also have overhead to keep accounting, you have overhead for administration, you have overhead for support services. And this is part of overhead when it's charged out this way. And that way you get you get transportation dollars to pay for part of library service, you get federal dollars to pay for part of library service, and you get general fund dollars to pay for part of library service. If you go back and you say agencies that are only general fund, we don't want you to pay that, then you can't uniformly charge the rest of the people either. It was the way it worked, and I think that's probably the situation here, if you could kind of research that and clarify that.
Well, and I'm not sure that the purpose of this is to limit the general fund contribution. I think the purpose is more to just figure out what the situation is.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Senator Mazzini was next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to go back to the FTE and the positions. I see that where they both increased by exactly one, so I'm assuming that there's a new service or a new individual that was hired. Could you explain that, please? And maybe you've said it already and I just missed it.
Madam Chair, I have that later in my presentation, okay. Or I'd be happy to tell you about it there.
Okay. Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make my position clear. I'm not trying to try to give you guys a hard time or hammer you this morning, okay? I'm really not. We are trying to set up a system here where we can look at budgets we're going to be seeing very soon, which are much bigger than this, and trying to get a handle on where the money flows to these agencies so we can have some understanding of it. It also allows us to look at the priority list that we're going to be getting from each agency and making some sense out of that also. And when we get to your priority list, I'll tell you where my concerns are about it, because we're looking at it from a different point of view than you are. We're looking at a situation where we have a free fall in general funds over the last year and a half, which we think will continue, or at least won't come up very fast, despite what some people have told us. And that free fall is going to affect all of us. We need agencies set and ready for that free fall. We're also very interested in FTEs to see if agencies really are or are not expanding. And something as simple as trying to find that out is extremely difficult. You're a very small agency. Look at 45 people. I mean, it's easy, okay? But when we look at agencies that have 200, 300, or 400, or 500 people, it's a lot more difficult. And so I hope you don't take this as a personal attack. It really isn't, okay? I am literate. I do read. Although some people question that sometimes. And I don't want to take this as a personal attack. It really is not. We're working a method out here. So I'm sorry to put you through this.
I think your comments are very well taken, Representative Bates, that we're obviously in a fiscal situation that none of us have ever encountered before, and the overall picture is incredibly dire, and we have been given a very specific mission by the co-chairs, and so bear with us as we inelegantly stumble through and try to figure out where the edges of this thing are, and please don't take personally as a reflection on the way that the program is administered or the way that you do what you do is not a reflection on that. It's a reflection on us trying to get our bearings in the field here and go ahead with this job that we've been given.
No, but thank you.
And with that...
Madam Chair, one other bit of information on the assessment, as Jim mentioned, it's increasing 4% from last biennium. The biennium before, it increased 6%, and the biennium before that, so that's back to 97-99, 99-01, it increased 19%. The impetus for that large increase was to establish an adequate ending balance.
Is that information in this presentation anywhere?
It's not.
But can you give me that again, then?
Oh, 4% from 0103 to 0305, about 6%.
Wait a second. 0103 to 0305 was
the current increase.
Huh? So it was 4% in each of those biennia?
It's a 4% increase between the two biennia.
Okay.
It's just 2% a year.
2% a year.
Got it.
Not even inflation.
Okay.
The previous biennium, it went up 6%. So that's from 99.01 to 0103.
It went up how much?
6%.
Okay, so 3% a year.
And the biennium before that, it went up 19%. And the major reason for that big increase, that biennium, was to establish an ending balance. They were functioning with a very inadequate ending balance, and there was a concerted effort to get a three to four month ending balance as a prudent business practice.
Okay.
So that gives you part of the history, not all the way back to 93, but a little bit of a sense. And generally, the way the assessments are set, and again, this is the same for the AG assessment or DAS or any of these assessment agencies, the agency estimates what they will need for their budget, including personnel roll-ups, you know, the various kinds of programs that they're thinking about early in the budget process. And their budget estimate at that point determines what assessment they will need. So the assessment increase is driven completely by the budget itself. That's also the reason if you reduce the budget, you can then reduce the assessment to other agencies. Okay, if we go on to slide four, a quick overview. The governor's budget is about a 7% increase from 0103 legislatively approved budget. Most of that is personal services cost roll-ups. In the current 0103 biennium through the special sessions, the reduction in ready-to-read was about $166,000 or a 12% reduction. That reduced the grants to about a dollar per child per year, which is where we started 0103 at, down to about 83 cents per child per year. In the governor's budget, we continue that reduced grant level for ready-to-read at 83 cents per year. Other programs are continued at their current level. This budget does fully fund rent for the Talking Book and Braille services and adds a new position to continue support of the search engine for the state's new website. And I'll have a little more detail as we go along here. On slide five, it shows the breakout of the four program areas. I think Jim really went over this pretty thoroughly in his slides. But you see library development at 43% of their budget. That is where the ready-to-read grant program presides, as well as the federal funds that are passed out to local libraries. The Talking Books and Braille at about 12% of their budget, and the government research and electronic services is the assessment portion of their budget, is about 37% of their budget. And administrative services uses both other funds and general funds to fund the central positions like Jim's position.
Excuse me. Could you repeat that? That the assessment part of the budget is only on that 37%?
Madam Chair, and some administration.
Okay, but so not on the whole budget.
Right.
Thank
exactly.
You.
On slide six, it breaks out their budget by categories, and the main point here is over a third of their budget is sent out as special payments. Again, those are the grants to local libraries. Okay, on slide seven, we actually get the detail of developing the governor's budget. We started out with a legislatively adopted budget at the beginning of 0103 of about $12.2 million total funds. And I have a typo here. It should be $3.2 million general funds. Through April, which is when we sort of freeze the budget process just because of timing issues, we were through second special session. At that point, ready-to-read had been reduced about $64,000. Base budget adjustments, is the compensation changes, about $822,000 total funds. The roll-up of the compensation changes is a substantial piece of this budget and will be substantial pieces of all the budgets you're going to look at. It's comprised primarily of four pieces. It's the roll-up of contract increases in, for salaries from this biennium, rolled up to for a full 24-month period in the next biennium. So, for instance, there's a COLA increase February 1st. We only had to pay for that for 5 months in this biennium, but we'll have to pay for it for 24 months next. A substantial piece of the roll-up is that kind of a roll-up. The second piece are merit steps, and I know there's been some discussion about statewide. The governor reduced the statewide budget to not give merit steps, but because of timing, we have not taken those dollars out of individual agency budgets. And right now, we're going through the process of getting a better estimate of what those dollars are. Our preliminary estimate for this agency was that about $76,000 in their 0305 budget in these numbers were merit steps. This agency has a lot of employees that have been at the agency for a long time that are at their top step. So generally speaking, they have smaller piece of merit dollars than some other agencies will. The other two major drivers of personal services is the 26% PERS rate increase that was built into this budget and the roll-up of health benefits, again, contract increases that were already approved in this biennium that now have to be funded for the full biennium next time.
Do you have the, what does the increased PERS assessment, what kind of financial impact does that have?
In terms of dollars in their budget, $220,000 out of the 822 is PERS.
So 822 represents what the total
personal
PERS
services
assessment for 0305.
No, it's the increase from 0103 to 0305.
Is $822,000.
Right. And that's the number in the slide. In your hand.
Okay. And then
of that 822, if you break that out into its pieces, 220,000 of that is the increase in PERS.
And the you'd have 600,000 that would be what would be required if the rate wasn't rolled up?
Exactly, if there was no rate increase.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. Just having a little difficulty tracking the detail within this roll-up. Did you say that there would be a $76,000 reduction?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, without merit steps, there would be approximately a $76,000 reduction. And we are anticipating that those reductions will be forthcoming once. I think Department of Administrative Services is still trying to get final numbers. Because of the timing of budgets, we basically freeze all positions as of last April. So it was the original personal services dollars are set at a point in time as we build budgets. Since then, agencies have hired other positions, people have left, people have been hired at a higher step maybe or a lower step. And what we're trying to do is kind of do a recalculation of where we're at currently.
Senator Mesrin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Are we going to have a discussion about vacancies and if they've been filled and those kind of things?
We certainly could do that.
Are we going to get today?
Madam Chair, I don't have information on vacancies, but I believe Jim is prepared to talk about that detail.
Before we leave the discussion, I want to take a look now at the cost of health benefits. Can you give me what part of that is an increase in cost and what part of it is Well, I guess just first of all, give me how much of the personal services cost is health benefits.
About $215,000 is the roll-up of health benefits.
That's what do you mean a roll-up on health benefits?
It's not the new contracts that might be negotiated for 0305. It's just paying for the contracts we currently have in place for 0305.
Okay, so let me just reiterate, make sure I'm getting this then. Without considering that there is contract negotiations that have to take place for 0305, if we were just to take the existing health care plan and move it forward, we would be talking about $215 million.
Madam Chair, exactly.
Thousand.
Thousand.
Thousand. Good thing we have a doctor in the house.
Yeah, supposedly.
Madam Chair, the other thing.
Can I ask that question a little differently?
Yes.
The other thing that makes.
Can I ask the question a little differently? For the same group of people, what was the cost for medical premiums in 0103? I mean, that's where you see your inflation. What did it cost to insure these people in 0103? What's the cost in 0305? I think that's the question we're really asking. What's the increase? We're seeing a medical increase of anywhere from 15 to 18% across the board right now. A substantial part of increased budgets is medical mm-hmm. costs, medical benefits, and PERS. So I think that's the question we're really asking. And again, they're a small group, but it helps us to get figures to get in our heads of how we're looking at their budgets. Is that the question we're really asking?
Madam Chair, I don't have the specific detail of the contracts. Increases during 0103, but I can get that for you.
If you could, that would be helpful. And then just again to reiterate, if we were to take the total PERS cost and the total benefit cost just for this agency, we're talking about $1 million.
It's about $425,000. Those two pieces, the $220,000 increase in PERS and the $215,000 increase in health benefits.
But
Madam
my understanding
Chair.
Is that the total PERS cost was $822,000.
Madam Chair, the $822,000 is total personal services. So that includes salary, PERS, health benefits, and merit steps. All
Madam
four.
Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. You use the phrase increase in PERS and increase in benefits, medical benefits. Did you mean increase or cost of PERS and cost of benefits for those 2 years?
Representative Bates, these are really increases. Wouldn't
Over
it be helpful if I put a little table together that
yep.
shows the actual, for each of these items, the actual amounts in each biennium and then the increases?
And I think what we're trying to get to, and again, trying to get our handle or our arms around these issues with a tiny discrete agency here, that we need to get some kind of a bead on how fast the costs are increasing for PERS and health care and what percentage of the personal service budgets that those numbers represent.
Mm-hmm.
So having information for, you know, the last three bienniums that compares the costs in those two areas over time and talks about the roll-up of it would be very helpful for us. And again, not to target this agency, but to look at this from a perspective.
Madam Chair, I'll try to get that together for tomorrow, and you'll have a little, because I think it is especially helpful to understand this as you go on to bigger agencies where it's harder to piece it together.
Well, and I think that all of us are very sensitive that these are some of the costs that are really increasing at huge rates, and to be able to get a handle on how that fits into the field of the budget would be very helpful.
Okay.
Please proceed.
Madam Chair, on slide 7, the last item there, essential packages. The standard adjustments were made in this budget for inflation, state government service charges. The ready-to-read grant was increased at a set dollar, was funded at the set dollar of 83 cents per child per year was not inflated per se, but the total dollars went up because our estimate of numbers of children in all 305 is higher. And finally, there was a phase out of 125,000 other funds for rent after a recent remodel. The library actually has less space that they're paying rent on.
What was the source of those other funds in the previous biennium?
Madam Chair, the rent funds?
Yes.
That's assessment funding.
They came out of the assessment. And what is the rate of inflation that you applied to this budget?
The standard inflation at 3.5%, and that inflated all services and supplies. The special payments are basically ready to read, so they did not get the standard inflation, but rather only the set dollar per child.
Okay.
Except rent.
Oh, that's true. Madam Chair, some of the state government service charges are not at the set 3.5, but, for instance, the Attorney General is 12.4. All those standard assessment rates were built into the budget.
Questions or comments for Dowse?
Madam Chair, I have a couple more.
Go ahead.
Slide 8 shows the rest of the development of the budget. The 090 package reduced general fund about $53,000. That was a fund shift on one position where we funded part of the position with federal funds instead of general fund. That general fund is then used down below in package 101 to fully fund the rent for the Talking Books program. In package 091, that's where we rolled forward the fifth special session reductions. It's a total of about $224,000 reduction. Most of that, $214,000, is reduced in ready to read. And again, that does continue the program at that 83 cents per child. There was also a small reduction, $10,000, to services and supplies in the Talking Books program. Package 101 does fully fund the Talking Books rent. This has been an ongoing budget issue in this agency. The space required for the collection has grown over time, and general fund has not been provided to fund the rent for that space. The agency between 99 and 01 did pare down their collection, partly on account of this issue, by 33,000 volumes, or almost 20%. So they've solved part of their rent problem by paring down the collection. This 52,000 will now fully fund their rent. What they have been doing in the last couple of biennia is they've been subsidizing the Talking Books program by paying for that portion of the rent with assessment funding, which we didn't think was appropriate, and so have done this shift to provide the general funds for that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Just want to make sure I'm tracking what's happening here around item. Can you relate 101, policy package 101, to the previous page or slide and the essential package information, that last bullet, the phase out of 125,000 other funds for rent. Is there a relationship between the two?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, no, there isn't technically. The $125,000 rent was strictly, we don't have the space anymore, we don't need to pay the rent. And it was on the space used by staff that provide services to other state agencies, so that was assessment. In this particular policy package, you are correct. We did also remove $52,000 other fund limitation out of their budget when we shifted this portion of their rent for Talking Books. We shifted over to general fund. that isn't showing. You're right. We moved a certain numbers of square feet over to general fund instead of other fund for talking books. So that would be some additional other fund reduction.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Okay, and policy package 102 is the one addition to this agency's budget. It provides $124,000 other funds. That again is assessment funding and one full-time equivalent position. And this is to continue work to provide the search engine on the state's new website. This biennium, the agency has provided staff support to implement the search engine and to work with state agencies to index their web pages properly so that when someone goes into that state website, they can use the search capacity to find the information from state agencies that they need. They have not previously received budget support for that work. They've basically been absorbing the workload on that project during the current biennium. This package then funds a position to continue that work. And I know Jim has more details on that package. Finally, on the last slide, there is a technical adjustment. This adjusts the reduction from fifth special session, and there's no net effect on their general fund budget, but it reapportions the reduction slightly. This came about because when the agency originally submitted their reduction plan, which was mostly a reduction to ready-to-read program, because of timing, the board had not had a chance to review that plan. In early December, the board did meet and did alter that reduction plan somewhat, and this makes that adjustment. What they did is instead of taking all that reduction out of ready-to-read, they did a fund shift on their volunteer coordinator position. So they're funding that position partly with other funds, and in doing that, saved about $43,000 in general fund, and that is then allocated to the ready-to-read program.
And what's that, the source of the other funds?
Madam Chair, that's assessment funding.
Okay.
It does increase the ready-to-read grant from the 83 cents per child per year up to 86. And that concludes my my budget overview.
Questions or comments? Thank you. The we have a half an hour left here, and I do want to go over the prioritized list that the agencies brought forward, and I also want to cover the issue of vacancies and vacant positions. And we also have three people that are signed up for public testimony. So perhaps at this time, Mr. Shepke, you could take us through the list that you've brought us to prioritize the state service and step us through what these are and the dollars associated with them.
Yes, Madam Chair. Jim Shepke, State Library. You have before you our best effort at prioritizing all the services of the State Library. And as you can see at the bottom, we followed some guiding principles in doing this. We did consult with our State Library Board about this. The first priority is to provide assistance and advice to libraries, basically our library development mission that we were actually founded to do 98 years ago in 1905, and that is down here as our first priority. Our second priority is the library service to the state agencies. The third priority is the talking book and braille services. It's very hard to have that as the third priority, but it was actually the third service that came to the State Library, and it's the most recent. It began at the State Library in 1969. Prior to that time, it was at the Multnomah County Library, and we took it over from them. So just sort of in order of precedence, that's kind of how it came in third. The next one is another piece of the library development work that includes more of the Ready to Read grant program. And the next one is more of a federally funded library development work to provide a statewide resource sharing network for the state. And these are all statutory. This is all statutory language here that we have prioritized. The next one is depositing state documents in libraries across the state so that Oregonians can have access to the information that is being provided by the state agencies. And the last one is collecting and disseminating statistics on libraries, another piece of the library development work. So that, Madam Chair, is our priority list.
So just for personal clarification, if I was to add up the total funds column, would I come to the $13 million number that is your governor's recommended budget?
You should, Madam Chair, but I actually think that this does not add up to that, and I have my business manager right here, and maybe he can explain that.
We did not improve the administration.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I even think, I don't see all the Ready to Read dollars here. Madam Chair, this was something that kind of was handed to us about 5 days ago, and I think with your indulgence, I'd like to bring you a revised copy of this tomorrow.
Because
I think the dollars are not accurate.
We also would again reiterate that we're kind of using you for our flailing upstream in the dark kind of a guinea pig here. And from our point of view, we're looking for a list that basically we can take the amount of dollars that we will allocate to this agency and use the list to figure out where we will draw the red line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're looking for in terms of information.
Yes, Madam Chair, we understand that.
And I understand how short of time that you've had to work with us, and I also understand that this is a completely foreign concept to anything that we've ever done before, and that it does involve a great deal of thought about how to organize the priorities.
Yes, ma'am.
Question. Just a comment.
So if we could see a revised list, that would be very helpful for us. And I think what we are all looking for is that the bottom line number matches up to the total budget number.
Yes, Madam Chair. We will have that for you tomorrow.
Thank you.
For instance, on your priority list number 4, promote adequate library services for all people of the state. That is so general, I don't even understand it. To me, it's more of a goal or a mission statement, not a priority. So if you could define your descriptions of what you're trying to do here, it would be most helpful.
We will do that.
Anyone have any more questions about the priority list? And not just in terms of what the information is on this, but in terms of the global task that we have.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. I apologize for my voice this morning. I do find the guiding principles listed at the bottom of our page to be very helpful in looking at your overall grid. So thank you for expressing them in the way that you did.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
If I could make just a few comments and questions,
yes,
that might help you. I'm looking at the global picture for a state government. We're most interested, frankly, in general funds. And so when we have the other funds problem, that's a significant problem for us to look at these budgets. We're also looking at how those general funds are leveraged, and so that when you are looking at matching funds, that's extremely important. And I know you're looking at it from the point of view of what's most important for what you're doing, and that's the way you should look at it. we need to look at it not only from that point of view, what's available financially to get you to where you want to be and what you want to do. So it's important from my point of view that I have a clear understanding of your general fund money and the leverage that brings to you. And then you can lay your priorities out by what you think are the most important programs. On your general priorities, I have a problem, generally speaking, with government in that just because the program has been there for a long time, it gets a priority over a new program. I just don't buy that as a general principle for any agency. I want to tell you that, and it's for all other agencies too. Just because it's been there for a long time doesn't mean a thing to me. Okay? On that basis, we'll all be still living in caves. Right? Maybe some of us should be. But that is not a priority to me. The priority should be, what does this program do? What is its outcome for the state of Oregon, for its citizens, not that it's been here for a long time? So I'd ask you to consider if you really want to make that one of your priorities. Thank you.
I might also add that given the task that we have, which clearly in the beginning is going to involve some backing off from even the level that's in the governor's budget, that in terms of our ability to have a rational discussion with you, this, we're going to kind of be going at your budget here with a tactical nuclear weapon where a scalpel might be more appropriate. So a higher level of detail, I think, about in breaking out the priority of services would be very helpful to us. Because if we do decide just to wipe out the third from the bottom or the second from the bottom or whatever decision that the committee makes, you may want to say, well, it would be better for us if you took, 25% of this one and 15% of this one, and we could work through it from that point of view. So I think that it is really critical that the agencies look at this in terms of the cut list and the add back list, and not just a breakdown of major service areas. Senator.
Madam Chair, thank you. I think you said it very clearly, but let me put it in just a little bit different terms, both in regard to if we have to take more reductions in programs as well as enhancements if things look better than we expect, of what it would look like for a 2% reduction or 2% increase, or what would the level of service look like, and what how would we be servicing our constituents. Madam Chair, if I might, this is not related to the priority list, but it's related to our process here today. Could I speak to that?
Yes.
I'm, quite frankly, again, we're all in training now, too. But I'm having a difficult time this morning keeping track of all the information that we've received. For instance, Ms. Ames' presentation this morning on page 8, package 102, shows $124,400. And on the information I received, I believe last Friday from Fiscal, there's a back page of it, and I don't know where that came from, whether it came from the agency or who, but in discussing package 102 there, the total is the same, but it speaks to, says this package would provide $115,040 for a full-time position to staff the project, and an also provides $64,960 for services and supplies. Well, that adds up to $180,000. And where our figures aren't matching up, I'm just having a difficult time figuring out what's going on.
Madam Chair and Senator Messerly, I think that is an error that I made. I had went through and did some changes on it, and this is an error. The supplies and services, I believe, were $9,360.
Right. Madam Chair, I think that $64,000 was the original agency requested budget, and part of those services and supplies were to buy the software, and DAS, Information Resource Management Division, is now actually going to buy the software.
Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Representative Bates, you have issues about the organization of the data, too. Can you bring those forward?
Yeah, I thank you, Madam Chair. I just gave a quick summation to the chair, which we're going to hopefully look at later on, of how to bring this information forward. We're getting information from LFO, from DAS, from the agency, it's almost impossible to track. And this is a small agency. I mean, this is it's a nothing agency, nothing personal, I don't believe that way. Bad choice of words. It's a very important agency, but their budget is relatively small and easy to track. I'm also serve on a committee that's going to look at much bigger budgets, and we have no hope of looking at those budgets in a reasonable fashion if this is the way we get our information. And it's impossible for the time we have up here, unless we're going to make this a full-time job for the next 2 years, and we still couldn't get it done. We have to have a better way of looking at this data and information. I've outlined a little bit of it, but I think DAS and LFO need to get together. I looked at LFO as my primary source. It's the legislative financial office. There are people. I know there's a lot of people going back and forth all the time, which makes me nervous, but, you know, I know it happens. We need a concise and routine and repetitive way of looking at these budgets, and we're not getting that. Even the prioritized list doesn't mean a lot to me. I know you've tried. It should be, what we really need is a cut and add back list. A list that says these are the things that would be least painful for us to cut at 10% of the governor's. I mean, the governor's talking about a 13% increase, I think, basically, based on revenue forecasts, which some of us are very concerned about. We're looking at 10%, and we probably should be looking at 5% and 0% based on revenue forecasts. And those are the kind of things we should have coming forward to us so we can look at an agency and say, this is what happens if we're at only 10% of the governor's expected increase, if we're at 5%, if we're at 0. And this is what we add back or don't add back, and depending on our revenue forecast. That's pretty straightforward information. Backing that up is, what does the other funds money look like flowing through, so we're not just cutting one agency based on some middle funds from somewhere else. We really want to know what FTEs mean for these agencies, and what the roll-up costs are for things we have very little control over, but we need to know about, medical benefits and PERS. And those are the kind of questions that keep coming through at each level, it seems to me. And I look forward, if the chair has a moment, to sit down and try to come up with a specific list of questions that we could ask to have each agency bring forward to us. It might be something we'd use in other subcommittees also. This is a small agency. We spent a couple hours on it, and I'm as confused now as when I started. Which maybe says more about me than you, but and probably does. But we need to get these answers out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Bates, I share your concern over the confusion here, and I think that having the information come in at us from three different tracks is kind of adding to the level of confusion, because the presentations aren't really parallel to one another. I think that we do need to go back and talk to the co-chairs about the difficulty that we're having with this budget.
I do.
And I don't want this to be a reflection on your presentation. I think it's more of a reflection on our instructions to you than it is on what you've come back to us with. But I share your concern that when we get into the Department of Ed or the Department of Higher Ed, where the issues are going to be infinitely more complex to this, we're going to drown underneath this wall of information. Mm-hmm. Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciating the comments that have been made, and also appreciating that the agency really does understand that we're all kind of in this together. We're going to figure out a way to work through this. But, you know, I do have an observation. A part of the problem in how we're looking at all of this is the way that we're structured as a legislative body to look at budgets in this Ways and Means process. I think what we're finding here is, frankly, is a good argument for why we need annual sessions, so that we're spending much more thoughtful and deliberative time on these budgets and the policy issues, and we don't feel the pressure of April 17th or whatever the date is of trying to get this done, rush and get this done, and rush and get out of here. So I just want to say that for the record, looking at the overarching problem that we're working under, and I don't know how we're going to address that this session. I don't know if anyone's introducing a bill, maybe I will, that deals with annual sessions, but the struggle that we're having this morning for me speaks to that need.
I agree, and we are under a very compressed time frame here, which has to do partly with the cash flow needs of the state.
Yes.
And having to get be able to put a balanced budget together.
Absolutely.
So that we can take care of those issues.
Absolutely.
But I keep coming back to the importance of this list of services and the rankings in them, and being able to have this be essentially the working document that we want to get, I think, as clear a bead as we can on what's driving increased costs from the biennium that we're budgeting for, and then two bienniums back from that. And all of us are interested in where the money is going over time. Is it going into benefits? Is it going into services? Where exactly is it going? But the rubber's going to meet the road where we figure out how much money we've got to spend and try to figure out the wisest way to spend it. And that's where we need the agency to come forward and work with us in the greatest degree of detail that is possible. Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this is no reflection on any of the presentations today, but it strikes me that, and I'll just ask the question, do all parties get together before we start the presentations to scope out who's going to be giving what part of reports, and do the numbers all match? And because I think we could save everyone an awful lot of work and time on at our level. And again, especially when we get into the bigger budgets, just like I firmly believe that before we send out a budget and work session, everyone needs to sit down together again and make sure that whatever we pass out will work for you. After all, you folks have to manage the agency and get the work done. And I think we should be mindful of that. But is that going on, or would that be helpful if it's not?
I think that the place that we're at in the process right now, considering that the agencies have been on a very fast timeline to get these budgets developed, and DAS and BAM have been probably burning the midnight oil trying to get their analysis done. And I would imagine that as we get further into this, the process will smooth out somewhat. But I know that the information is somewhat lagging because of the point that we're at in the process and the short timeline that we have to do it. But can you talk to us a little bit, Linda, about what your understanding is of the cooperation between BAM and LFO and the agencies?
Madam Chair, we did meet on this to go over it, and this was my error that I made. I thought I had corrected it, but I guess I had taken the wrong copy to put together. But my understanding is we did meet to go over our presentation, which was just last week, to make sure our numbers were correct.
That's, Madam Chair?
Yeah.
That's not really the question I'm asking.
Okay.
The question is coordination between three agencies and presenting to us information that allows us to do what we really need to do, which is look at options in every budget and across the entire budget of what it looks like to match up with revenue. I mean, just to make a side comment, what we're going through here is not only a result of trying to budget for 2 years in advance, which is almost impossible. We should be doing it annually, as most states do, and most businesses do. It's also a revenue problem. It's primarily a revenue problem. It's not a budget problem. On the other hand, we want to be efficient and effective in government, so that is part of the process. But what we're really getting to here is we're getting information, important information, from LFO, from DAS, budget management, and from agencies that don't go to our central problem. Our central problem is if there's no new revenue, let's assume there's not going to be new revenue or no significant new revenue, where do we cut each of these budgets in the most reasonable fashion we can? And that's going to come down ultimately to what Chair Morgan says, is this piece of paper right here. Where do we make the cuts? And what's most important to your agency? And you listed 1 to 7. We start at 7, go the other direction. Do we make cuts by wiping out number 7? Do we make cuts by doing it for a percentage basis? And maybe we won't need to make cuts. Maybe revenue will increase as the economy improves. But we can't count on that. We have to be ready for the alternative, because we just went through 5 special sessions that I do not want to repeat. Okay? And we did that because we had a revenue shortfall continuing quarterly. It doesn't seem to ever end. And March does not look good. So I expect that despite what we're hearing a lot from revenue forecasters, we cannot trust that information. They're doing the best they can. But we're in an economy no one's ever seen before. And I'm not going to go into all that right now, but we're in an unusual situation, to say the least. So what we're asking for, I think, is get these agencies together, present to us your information, focus on this, and give us the information on this sheet that tells us where the money's coming from, where it's going, what other funds means, what PERS means, what all those roll-up costs really mean, and do it in a concise fashion so we can have some understanding of where you're trying to go and where we're trying to go. We all need to get on this page together. Does that make sense, Madam Chair?
It does make sense, and I think the only thing I could add to that is not only would the prioritized list of services be the basis of the takeaway side, but we've been also asked to use it as the basis for add-backs if we get into a rising revenue situation. So no matter which way the economy goes, we're going to be using this to make our decisions about which way to go. So if you've got one whole chunk of your budget in the bottom list or on the bottom box, then you're going to be missing that whole function of your budget. And that's why I come back to the necessity to not just give us whole program areas, to give us the ability to surgically go in and take things out of different areas to maintain the core services. And we have only about 7 minutes left, and I have three people that have signed up to give public testimony. So, Ms. Vars, I don't know if you're going to return tomorrow when we continue the discussions on this agency, but I just wanted to say that we don't thank enough the people that volunteer their time to serve on boards and commissions, and so I just want to salute the contribution that you personally have made to the state library and recognize that you take time out of your personal life and all the other things that you do that. And we really appreciate it because the system wouldn't work nearly so well without people like you.
Thank you.
And with that, I will call a panel forward, Connie Bennett, Matt Webster, and Nan Hine.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Nan Heim, representing the Oregon Library Association. Our organization is made up of about 1,000 members who join as individuals. They are staff and trustees of public, college, community college, all types of libraries, including school libraries, Representative Smith. With me this morning to testify in support of the state library's budget are our current president, Connie Bennett, who's director of the Eugene Public Library, and our immediate past president, Janet Webster, who is director of the Hatfield Marine Science Library in Newport. Both Connie and Janet served this past year on the Senate Interim Library Task Force on Library Cooperation, which, as part of its responsibility, reviewed how limited state general fund and federal fund dollars are used for local libraries in the state, so I thought it would be appropriate for them to be here today. Before I turn it over to them, I wanted to address something about the assessment formula that's used to fund the state library, because the Oregon Library Association was very involved in that when it started 10 years ago. That also was a recommendation of an interim legislative task force. In that case, it was both House and Senate members. The reason that it is divided two-thirds per capita and a third use is that at the time there was several state agencies were building up their own libraries and their own subscriptions, and it was felt that by making the formula two-thirds FTE, state agencies would in fact be encouraged to use the state library because they were paying for it. So that's why that formula was developed. Connie.
Madam Chair and members, I'm here, Connie Bennett, president of the Oregon Library Association. I'm asking, came to speak about the Ready to Read program, which, as you have heard in the governor's budget, has been reduced from last biennium $1 a child down to 86 cents a child. You've been talking a lot this morning about leverage of general fund money. This is general fund money that will leverage into the county and city budgets in a way that direct way in terms of the benefits being far greater than the cost of the program. This program is given directly to public libraries throughout the state, serves directly to the youth, preparing them to read in programs that, in for example, at the Eugene Public Library, it's a bilingual program that goes into the hospitals where children are, when they're first born, makes contact with the parents and provides materials either in English or Spanish, getting that child started on the right road where it leads into being prepared to learn to read at the point that they reach school. So it's even before they get into the public schools. Excuse me. I just want to encourage you to keep the support for this. It's a critical program, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
It's almost in the light of time. Where we are with time, I'd say, you want any questions of us? I would be glad to,
I think you have another session
scheduled tomorrow, so I would be glad to come back tomorrow.
Oh, if you would, if that's okay. I mean, if you want to do that, that would be great. Or I'm sure that we'll stick around to hear what you have to say if that's going to cause you great inconvenience.
Either way, it's...
Madam Chair, I'm always, and I think we all are, very thankful for people coming up and testifying. You've come from Eugene, which is taking time out of your day, a couple
yes.
hours each way. You've come from
Newport.
Oh,
I would be very willing to stay and listen to your testimony today and not have you come back tomorrow. You've got lives to live, I'm sure, and I feel it's very important to listen to you now while you're here and not ask you to come back tomorrow.
I agree.
My opinion only.
That's fine, but I would also want to make sure you all have an opportunity to ask us questions.
Please proceed.
I'm Janet Webster, as Nan said, the immediate past president of the Oregon Library Association, and I run the library at Oregon State University's Hatfield Marine Science Center. As a state employee, I'm here on vacation time. So, the library community has worked really hard over the last decade as a group to kind of articulate a vision for where we want to be. And particularly in the last couple of years, we've worked to say, where do we want to be in 2010? And as part of that, the state library plays a pretty pivotal role. And sometimes we push Mr. Shepke into maybe taking a role he is not always comfortable with, but we need a state agency that can act as a gatekeeper, as a focal point, as a way to help all of the libraries in the state, and that includes school libraries, the K-12, academic libraries, public libraries, to move forward. The state doesn't put a lot of general funds into direct services to libraries, but I think we, as Connie said, we leverage the Ready to Read. And right now what we're seeing is we need that shift, as we mentioned in Senate Bill 12, from that direct reimbursement from that lender to funding electronic resources. That's where Oregonians are going. That's where we are. That's what the state needs to support. So my point in all of our discussions here, and I do sympathize with the difficulty of grasping even a small agency's budget where you have all these different funding streams. When we were on this task force, we were realizing all we had to work with were the federal money. There was not going to be any additional state money, and we did not want to rob the Ready to Read program to fund electronic resources. Yet Oregonians desperately need that equitable access to basic information, whether it's the fifth grader in Newport or the researcher on the Oregon State campus. And so our funding is looking at using those dollars and again leveraging them. And here I'll give the example of Oregon State, where we buy a lot of electronic resources. But the ones that we're talking about at the state level, we probably are paying close to $100,000 for a full text general periodical database that our undergraduates and graduate students and researchers would use, as well as access to the Oregonian online. by going in on a statewide contract and having the state library take a lead role in helping to negotiate that contract, we cut that by at least two-thirds. So that's significant savings, and that is general fund savings. So it's, again, a leverage point.
So that gives you the ability within your budget to redirect that money into areas that you have priorities for.
Yes. I would also say, as Representative Bates seems to be familiar with some of this literature, we're looking at, again, at Oregon State University, of a collection budget of around $4 million, of which probably $3 million of that are for science, are for serials or journals. Those tend to have gone up 10% every year over the last 12 years. Our budgets have not been factored in at 10%. So while we save where we can, we're still making cuts. So we don't have a lot of fun money to play with. But whenever we can collaborate and form consortia, we found incredible cost savings and a better delivery of service. I think another example of that is the Orbis system, where we do share our resources through an online catalog. So you don't always have to buy another copy of a book. You can share it back and forth between the academic libraries. I think in general, I'm fairly passionate about libraries. And people say, you're at this specialized research library. What do you know about kids in school, and why do you even care? And you just work back. If you don't support our ready to read and getting those programs into local public libraries, I don't have graduate students that know how to even do research. You're starting to see that the trickle-up effect of the demise of our school libraries, which the task force really struggled with, and it sent a fairly strong letter to the Quality Education Commission about the problem with our school libraries. We're not supporting those adequately, and that will mean that we're having a citizenry does not use information well, and that's going to put Oregon at a great disadvantage in terms of business. The Library Association, I think our overall vision is that our libraries really are the central information provider for our communities and our campuses. And we need the state library to be there, as a convening force. And that's partly what Senate Bill 12 does. That's what Mr. Shepke and his staff do every day. They provide a service that is sometimes intangible, but it's the one staff person that you know has a general vision of the whole state and can help a small rural library over in eastern Oregon figure out how to write a grant, or help a rural library, what's a really good bilingual program, what works, or does something as innovative as partnering with Willamette University and say, no big deal of combining a special library, the state library's catalog, with an academic library and using that and setting that as an example of different types of partnerships. So I encourage you to scrutinize this budget, because I think it is a good test case for what information you need, and it's very appropriate. We are the information providers. We should be able to do this well. But I would urge you to support this, and in particular, look very hard at Ready to Read. That's a fairly critical service. Thank you.
Questions or comments from the committee?
So can I assume Ready to Read is going to be on your priority list?
I'm not writing the priority list.
Madam Chair. Senator Gordley. I appreciate the question from the representative. I'm tempted to ask a similar question, but I'll say this instead. I would hope that as the agency comes back with its prioritized list, that list is also linked to the Oregon benchmarks. If you look at the benchmarks for this particular agency, there are two, and these are key benchmarks, 18 and 19. 18 is the percent of Oregon children entering school ready to learn, and 19 is the percent, and 19, benchmarks 19 and 20, the percent of third and eighth graders who achieve established skill levels reading. So I just put that out there as a comment and as a thought as you go back to prepare to come back to us with your prioritized list.
That's an excellent remark, Senator Gordley. And I think that that is something that's in the back of all of our minds of how we do reach those benchmarks. I would say that the State Library went through a five-year strategic plan for the Library Services and Technology Act funding. This is mandated by Congress. And a lot of what they did in that was look at not just the Oregon benchmarks, but other ways, other indicators that they could track to see how effectively they were using those federal dollars, where those shifts could be. And some of those are the readiness to learn benchmarks, some of the very just physical access to libraries, that type of thing. So there's quite a bit of work that's been done in the agency on that level.
Further comments?
Thank you very much for coming, ladies. As Representative Bates has reiterated, we are always very excited when people from the real reality of Oregon join us and talk about the program.
Well, thank you very much, Chairman Morgan. And I'm sure we could have packed the house, but we knew that you were on a tight timeline. So thank you.
The what we'll do is adjourn the meeting today. Tomorrow we also have the State Library Board on our agenda for discussion, and I look forward to working with the agency again on the prioritized list, and I think Senator Gordley's comments on making sure that the benchmarks are part of that discussion is very critical. We haven't yet had the discussion about vacancies and the issues surrounding those. So having no further business before the committee today, we will adjourn and we'll reconvene at 8:30 tomorrow morning. Okay.